This is an ABC podcast.
You know those moments in your life when someone says something to you that opens your eyes, that puts your life on a new course? But then you rarely get to tell that person what they did, what effect they had. Hi, I'm Miyuki Okiranta. A couple of years ago, we did a story here on Earshot about a policeman who had post-traumatic stress disorder. And another former policeman called Bill heard the story and left us a comment on our website.
I joined the Tasmanian Police Force in 1976. Unfortunately, after a couple of years, I started to change but could not put my finger on the cause.
In the comment, Bill went on to describe his own struggle with PTSD.
Anytime, anywhere, and without notice, the first thing that happens is tears rolling down my cheeks uncontrollably.
And then someone called Brett reached out and left a reply to Bill's comment.
You are a top bloke, Bill. You should remember me from all those years ago on your beat. Chin up, Bill, and maybe we have a chat sometime over a coffee about old times. The cop and the crew.
Producer Claudia Taranto was intrigued, and so she went to Hobart to look for Brett and Bill. There's strong material and language in this story, so maybe listen without the little ones around. Here's The Cop and the Crim.
It took me weeks to find Bill Rollinson, but I've tracked him down to this nursing home that sprawls along the banks of Hobart's Derwent River. It's warm inside and the staff are welcoming as they point me down the wide corridor towards his room. He looks like a bald eagle perched on the edge of his bed, his curious eyes watching everything.
How old are you?
Well, I died in 2017, so I'll be 2 years old.
Bill doesn't have dementia. He actually was dead 2 years ago for 45 minutes. He had a cardiac arrest, and he's angry that he was revived.
Yeah, I was dead. I hate everybody because they put me through this.
This is a mild brain injury, and living in a nursing home when you're only 71, and being left with loose throat muscles that affect your voice.
If it's his wish that he wants to die, then who am I to stop him?
That's Beck, Bill's daughter. After the heart attack, he had a defibrillator installed. Then a year or so later, he insisted on it being turned off. He doesn't want it keeping him alive, but that's typical of Bill.
When I visit, we sort of do our hellos, how are you, how you been, blah, 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 how's Eb? And then I'll sit there and Dad will just go, blah, 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 blah. I love him to death. I do anything for him. A lot of people sort of looked at me as though, oh, your father's a police, you know, he's a cop. Poor you. But matter of fact, a lot of the people at school had great respect for my father because he was a good cop.
Bill joined the police force because of a bet.
It was a bet between a friend of mine who'd just joined for a dozen bottles of Cascade Red, big ones. I still haven't got them. I won the bet, I still haven't got them.
He was sent to a down-at-heel part of Hobart and he found that he loved the work.
I could see everybody's got something good. You just got to show them that they've got it. Tread softly, softly. If they whack me, they got whacked too. But prior to that, they get a lecture from me, and that's got to be worse than anybody. When I worked at Glenorchy, they weren't crooks, they were just terrorisers. They terrorised everybody, just for the fun of it. There were a lot that needed shooting.
And one of those kids at Glenorchy was Brett Carhart.
Old Billy Rollinson. We had some times with Billy, especially my mate Simon. We used to wag school together.
It was the late 70s. Simon and Brett had long hair and they loved hooning.
You just felt free, you know, you just were good. You felt invincible. It was fun times, but you used to get sick of getting picked on by the coppers. And back then, you could lose your licence and stuff over not having a horn in your car. And, you know, they just picked on you for just stupid things and made you worse. Well, made me worse. Made a lot of my other friends worse.
One night, they borrowed Simon's mother's boyfriend's old Hillman.
We got it going anyway. It was only running on about two cylinders, this car. It was blowing smoke. It was like a steam train.
They started driving it and then...
Here comes a cop car. And I went, oh, you're joking, aren't you? And who was it? Billy Rollinson. So we darted off down in the car and he's pulled up behind us in the cop car with the lights and the sirens going. So we got out and bolted and started running. He's going, halt, halt, halt. So we stopped and put our hands up in the air and then I looked around and said to Simon, shit, he ain't got a gun, let's go. So we kept running again. And he's going, halt, I know you are, you bastards, he's going.
They both ran and hid, but Bill caught up with them.
So he ended up back at the police station. And he didn't know what to do, whether the charges for car stealing or driving an unlicensed car or unregistered car. He was confused, but I thought, yes, finally got the old Billy Rollinson. Because we weren't really on good speaking terms because he'd always pull me over. But he was a bit of a bugger. He'd just get you for anything.
It was pretty wild on the streets of Glenorchy back then. Brett remembers one night when he and his friends had a battle with a gang called the Claremont Boys.
So there was about 25 of us with bats and bars and everything, taking on about 100 blokes. And we were swinging and getting them, and oh, she was on for young and old. And we ended up over at the Claremont Hotel in the car park. And all of a sudden the coppers come from everywhere. I thought, oh my Jesus, and here's Billy Rollinson. He had his ribs busted. One copper had no teeth and... No, I actually felt sorry for them because they were worse off than us than the other blokes. So anyway, the cops come and are trying to work out who to arrest, and so we just all jumped in our cars and headed off to Coles Bay, a big beach party. The coppers back in them days, they had a lot to handle.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You. Today, Brett works as a crossing guard at Newtown Primary School, about 5 kilometres down the road from where he grew up in Glenorchy.
Thank you. You're right.
He looks like a koala in high viz.
You get to know all the kids and all the parents, and you get your high fives from the kids, and you know, and you get to tell jokes with them of a morning sometimes.
A lot of the immigrants are starting to open up to me lately too, so yeah. Hello, how you going? Good, good holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good, eh?
They just won't talk in the classrooms about their child or nothing, and they open up to me and, hey, hello, how are you going? Help a few out too, you know, with kids with their bikes and stuff when they've got none. Yeah.
Two of them right there, want two wine.
It's a convenient job for Brett because 5 of his 8 children go to the school.
I'm Adam Petito and I'm the principal here at Newtown Primary School.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Thank
Brett
you.
Is formerly a crossing guard at the school, but his role is larger than that. He's a member of our school association and he's up for anything. He's part of every event that the school has, whether that's our concerts, reinvigorating our canteen and getting it up and running for the students. Basically, if it's on, Brett's part of it.
Hi, Melissa. Hey. Yeah, good, yourself? Yeah, been doing my bit.
Over this last summer, he's been really busy off fighting fires and something that he takes really seriously and with great empathy for the people affected by the fires.
Oh, that was just wiping the sweat.
Brett bristles if you mention the word lollipop. He wasn't always a crossing guard. He used to have his own traffic control business. You know, the people who put out barriers and stop signs and manage the traffic around building sites. His father used to help him out.
Dad was the backbone of it as well, you know, and if I needed another ute to bring up or something, if something was wrong or a sign, I mean, he'd be there with it.
But when Brett was really young, things were more complicated with his father.
I love my dad, you know, but he just had a bit of a checkered life. Had run-ins with the law, very bad ones, you know, and I remember one time he come home and we sit at the table at dinner and he'd sit down and just, what's this shit in front of you? What's this shit? You know, I'm not letting shit pick it up and throw the plates through the window. That's the sort of childhood I had, you know. Get slapped around a bit with the old belt and the garden hose, the jug cord and, yeah. But they ended up getting divorced and I virtually, mum tried her best to bring me up.
going out to try to get a job to support a family. Dad tried to commit suicide, and you know, that sort of played on my mind a bit. And then we just sort of lost contact with me and Dad. So I self-taught with everything. I taught myself how to fix engine on cars, and taught myself how to drive a car. And I mean, I was driving truck when I was 14 years of age, and yeah, so I've been driving trucks for a lot of years, and since I was a kid, virtually.
And while Brett was driving trucks with and without a licence and being chased by Bill, Bill's psyche was unravelling.
In 17 years, I saw more death than anyone should have to see.
I think it was a slow process. It didn't sort of happen overnight. There were a lot of incidents that actually, built up over the years that he was in the police force. Dad used to have a duty diary. He'd write in it every day, and that was... some of the things in there were absolutely devastating. I remember a young man was wanting to commit suicide, so he went into the bedroom. He'd actually talked himself in, sat down beside him. He was just about to take the gun out of this young man's hand, and he shot himself. It was just, he was very explicit in what he wrote, and I guess that's how he tried to deal with what he was facing, because there wasn't that support or counselling for people.
Bill was moved from Glenorchy to a quieter police district, Bridgewater. But by then he was also feeling this strange addiction to the adrenaline rush he got whenever he chased someone.
Any chance he'd get to chase someone, he would. And he'd come home and he'd think that was fantastic.
You beauty, a runner. The moment you said runner and started the car, you got this, not a drunk feeling, but it's a feeling of, oh, that feels good. And it did. And whilst ever you're chasing someone, you got it. But the moment you stopped, shit, I'm dead.
And I think that's why he spent so much time at work, because he was getting that adrenaline rush.
And then Christmas 1990, I walked in the back door and head down the hallway towards the kitchen, and I just stopped. As if I, whack, nothing. I couldn't move. Anyway, doctor walked, this is what he told me after. He walked up to me, looked at my eyes and turned me around and took me home, undressed and put me in bed, and left a note, no more work.
Bill was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and he had to stop working.
I loved the job. My life was destroyed when I had to leave.
By the time he was 19, Brett had seen the inside of a police cell more than a few times. He'd spent 2 weeks inside on remand at one point. He'd lost his licence a dozen times, and he'd seen his share of police brutality.
They just tried to pin you with everything. They'd smack you up the side of the head, you know, get the old phone book around the head sort of trick.
They used a phone book because it didn't leave any bruises. But he never put in a formal complaint. There were some unwritten rules back then.
It was just a thing we had that you wouldn't dob on nobody for doing anything, you know? And you wouldn't even put the coppers in for smacking you around. The law was the law, and we got away with the lot, but when you were in a corner, you couldn't get out of it.
But when the police tried to pin a hotel robbery on Brett, his opinion of them sank really low. And then something unexpected happened.
One particular day, I'm driving in the XU1 up through Rallunga Road, and I was bare hanging up there. Bit of a fast car, you know, XGR, XU1's running. I reckon I was doing about 100 going up there. And there's his bloody cop car coming out the side street. Got out to really have a go at this copper. And it was Billy Rollinson. I went, oh, Jesus Christ, Billy Rollinson. And he got out, he's going, Brett, slow down. I went, oh, yeah, all right. No, I should have done it. I'd been stupid. He goes, yeah, well, next time, slow down. He said, otherwise I want to book you. And I went, oh, yeah, all right, no worries, Bill. That day changed my
perspective of all police officers, that they do have a heart. And he let me off. He didn't bother booking me, even going over my car, ripping my car apart like they used to do, and, you know. Ever since then, I had respect for him. He knew that I didn't have my father around and stuff, and I looked up to Billy, yeah, as a father figure. Yeah, he didn't know it, but, yeah. He virtually taught me my ways of, you know, respect and stop being a bloody idiot. Because that day, what he done for me, is that day is when my life changed. My life turned around. I actually sold my X-ray one and all, met this girl, ended up getting married, having a daughter, yeah. Changed my history and turned me into a better man to what I am today. Because if I had kept on going the way I did, I would have ended up in jail.
But Bill knew nothing of the effect he'd had on Brett. After he left the police force, he changed. He started drinking more, he rode a Harley, and he got some tats.
That one was her.
It's a python.
Yeah. I like snakes.
So you've got, oh, you've got a cobra on the other arm.
Yeah, both.
So you've got two snakes, but, on each, one on each arm.
Yeah.
Bill couldn't work, but he started helping out a friend who ran a pizza place. And sometimes he used to borrow the kitchen knives.
He would quite often walk around with this great huge dagger in his pocket. And I do remember one night someone was being beat up on the corner or something like that. So Dad's got out with this great huge knife and told this fella to buzz off. And then the police came past, apparently, and arrested him, took him in. Yeah.
He spent the night in the lockup. It was pretty humiliating.
It was like a complete personality change.
It felt like he was testing those same boundaries that he used to police.
I'm a bit of a devil. When I was off, I thought I was going to try out growing marijuana. I didn't sell it, use it or anything. I just grew it. And then the next copper stole it. Took the bloody lot. And from that day on, I had cameras everywhere. It was like Fort Knox. I had cameras everywhere.
How many years had you been out of the police force when you grew marijuana?
Well, I'd been off sick for 3 years. Still a member of the police force, but not an active.
The times that he tried to commit suicide, he would ring me and tell me that he's taken an overdose of some sort of medication, so I'd race down and he'd still be conscious. I'd ring the ambulance. They'd take him away. It was upsetting the first couple of times it happened, but then I started to get angry. I thought he was a little bit selfish. I said, Dad, don't keep bringing me into it. I can't do it. I've got a family of my own. I've got my, you know, own worries. Stop expecting me to be there every time you call, because it's not going to happen. It can't happen, because by doing this, I'm enabling you to keep going with what you're doing.
Bill did stop after that. He went on to win a damages case against the police, and he recently applied for and was awarded a Police Integrity Medal. It's something he's really proud of. But these things haven't taken away his PTSD. His emotions are still pretty numb.
I don't know what hate is, and I certainly don't know what love is. I can't, if you say what's love, I said I don't know. I don't know. Hate doesn't compute with me. Love doesn't compute with me. Frustration does.
It helps Bill that the nursing home where he lives is in a beautiful environment. Most days, he walks along the river.
I walk out here for tranquility, get lost in my own, well, not many thoughts, don't think. No, it gets me away from thinking, because you don't need to think while you walk. Flush your mind out of all bad thoughts, if you can. And just watch life pass above us. Because that's what it does. And I hate being useless. And being unable to do anything. So that's a real part. That's part that pisses me off no end.
Thanks to Bill, Brett didn't turn out to be much of a crim. He had another child, started his traffic control business, and got on with enjoying life. And then one day, he got a phone call. His father had had a heart attack. They hadn't seen each other for decades.
Went in the hospital, seeing him and laying in the bed, and because he'd lost an eye through an injury, and started talking away, and I forgave what he did. You know, he was my dad, so I still had to be there for him. And I think he knew that he had done wrong. That's why he was sort of helping me out all the time. But he was there, we had our Christmases together at his place, the kids would love it, you know, Grandpa. Yeah, and he could be doing all these silly things, you know, and pulling his glass eye out and sitting it on the table. He said, I'll keep an eye on that for you. Yeah, no, it was all good, you know, and then up until the day he died, you know, the business was running good. It was just perfect. And then, he died on me, so,
Brett grieved deeply for his father, and he developed depression. He couldn't keep working. He had to close his business.
I just couldn't handle it anymore, so I just sold everything, sold all my utes. We ended up homeless. Imagine that with a couple of seven kids. There were two attempted suicides. What fixes me is keeping myself occupied, doing stuff I love doing firefighting. I love doing the crossing with the kids. It keeps me sane. There's the school canteen. I don't do that now because I have a bit of an anxiety attack and bits and pieces, but I cry every night. I still do to this day, cry every night. My kids keep me going. Yeah, because I will not leave my kids. My kids are my world. Yeah. I don't have my kids go through what we've proved. No father.
It's finally raining in Hobart after weeks of hot weather and fires that have scorched the very soul of the island. There's such a sense of relief in the air. It feels like a good day for renewal. So I'm bringing the cop and the crim back together at Bill's nursing home. It's been more than 30 years since they've seen each other.
Billy, how are you, buddy?
Good, mate,
how are you?
Yeah, really.
Well, just first time seeing you without your uniform on.
You're looking well, eh? Thanks. Yeah. It's not what you see on the outside, it's what's inside, stuffed.
Bill and Brett find a lot to reminisce about.
I think he was originally in the old police station on the highway near next to the church.
Ah, slippers?
Yes.
Chambers?
Yes.
He used to go out on call outs in his slippers.
But Brett hasn't come just to remember the good old days. He has something he wants to say to Bill.
I thought I was nice to you.
No, he was there, boy. One time I was driving up a Lunga Road Chigwell one day in my XU1 Tirana, and I was fair hammering.
Now it's coming back.
Yeah, I was fair hammering up there, and you coming out of the side street, and you put the old disco lights on. Yeah, well, that's when you come in, and you pulled me up. And
I bet I swore at you.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. You said, fucking slow down, and you put it to finger. But you let me off that day. From that day on, you let me off. And I thought myself, my total opinion of you changed that day. Yeah, because the old man wasn't in my life much as that. And then you were more around me than anybody.
No, you were around, hanging around my streets.
Yeah.
No, but once I'd met you, and everyone was complaining about these rat bags and bloody Google, but they didn't get to know you.
Mm.
I made the point to get to know everybody else too.
Exactly. I mean, you changed my life, so if it wasn't for you, I think I don't know where I'd be now. Yeah. Total respect for you. You're a bloody good cop.
Not what I want to hear, but thanks.
Yeah. No, well, you were, so, yeah.
Actually, that's one of the reasons I joined the police. It wasn't to get all the baddies.
Mm.
It was to try and help people. Now, help goes in a thousand different ways.
Mm.
If I can give a shoulder to someone needs to talk to, or a good ear.
Mm.
But if someone's a good talking to, I'll give it to them. Or I used to. Still, I don't do it much time now.
Then, like two old soldiers on Anzac Day, they share battle stories of traumatic events they've both witnessed.
It's the same thing with the other mate of mine when he jumped off the bridge.
I said, well, you're going to jump off this bridge, mate, and kill yourself. But he, like, he had his mindset on it.
Actually, well, I was in traffic, and there's some guy climbed the rail of the bridge and was on the other side of it. I got there first, as usual. Anyway, he hit the water like a bloody bomb. Okay. He should say, no, it didn't kill him.
It didn't, eh?
Black and blue, he went in like that. He just hit the water, like swam on concrete.
Yeah.
But he black and blue.
Yeah, they didn't find my mate till about a week later.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I didn't watch him go down. Couldn't do it.
No.
But, yeah, but you hear him hit the water.
It's like explosion.
Yeah, it's like a big boof.
Mm. I shouldn't talk about those sorts of things to anybody.
Mm. Mate, it plays on your mind, but it's actually good to actually talk about shit like that because it gets it out. It's not stuck in your mind to talk to anyone about
well,
it.
When I can go watch and tell you I'm just bursting in tears.
Yeah.
And I still don't know why. Well, I suppose I do.
Mate, I still cry every night.
Yeah. I mean, and people said, real men don't cry. Yeah. Let them say that to me, yeah. To my face.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hearing you.
People that say that sort of thing have never had any trauma in their own bloody life.
Exactly.
Especially when it's caused by other people.
I have had the depression. I still suffer depression real bad. I've had the two attempts suicide. I find that talking to someone else who's got depression is easier and better to talk to than talking to somebody else that has never had it.
I don't know how many times I was told, build a bridge and get over it.
No, yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah, I wasn't a carpenter, mate. Yeah, I'm glad I caught up with you.
Yeah, I'm too. No, actually, that's the first person that's ever said anything like that to me. I've never had anyone say that I helped them, and they don't know where they'd be if I hadn't spoken to them. But
yeah, it's all truth, mate. It's all truth. It's good seeing you, mate.
You too.
Bloody hell, it was. A good reminiscing.
Yeah, oh,
it was. If I didn't have to go back to work, I'd probably be still here at midnight, mate, eating your tea.
Yeah,
Stay in touch,
buddy.
Right
on,
mate.
So, how was that?
Yeah. Pretty good,
actually. He was still the same person. A bit bigger. A bit rougher. Yeah, a bit rougher. But he's still that same heart. And I don't think you ever take that away from anybody.
If this story has raised any issues for you, do get in touch with Lifeline 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue. The Cop and the Crim was produced by Claudia Taranto. The sound engineer was John Jacobs. And I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and I'll catch you next time with more Earshot.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.